Hi, it's Tim Dre, president of the Illinois AFL-CIO. Thank you for listening to The Worker's Mic, supported by the Illinois AFL-CIO, fighting every day for working families. Visit ilafl-cio.org today. Enjoy the show, and remember, it's better in a union.
Good morning, everybody. Happy Sunday, and welcome to The Worker's Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with the Midwest Coalition of Labor, and I'm here with Phil Davidson from the Mid-America Carpenters Regional Council. What's happening, Phil?
Good morning, Ed. How are you, man?
I'm great. I haven't seen you in a little while.
It's been a while. It's been a while.
Two ships passing in the night. I'm out 1 week.
I know. But you're galvanizing around the globe.
I miss your face.
Yes, I miss you too.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you.
We've got a lot going on in the show today. We've got a guest. We have Nick Weaver. He's the president and chief operating officer of ABOC, which is rebranded from used to be Amalgamated Bank of Chicago. Now they're known as ABOC. And yeah, we're going to talk a little bit, the RNC, just sort of digesting all of the things that are happening in the RNC.
A lot to digest.
For sure. We'll do it for the Democratic Convention as well. But, you know, we were introduced to a new face this week, and that's J.D. Vance. And it was a difficult week, certainly, with the attempted assassination. It's a horrible day in America. You know, I think we all like to believe firmly that that's not what happens in America. We're not that kind of country. So I'm hoping we can find a way to move forward in a way that's uniting, and political violence just should never be a thing.
It was good to see that was one area where there was bipartisan agreement.
Yes. So
that's cooled down the temperatures here. This is, and we do need to get back to that in this country of just, I mean, there's so many things that we need together to be concerned about when it comes to global warming, when it comes to automation, and like, we don't need this divide.
Yeah,
like,
if you wear a blue tie, if you wear a red tie, if you don't own a tie, whoever you are, a lot of the issues we have day to day are very, very similar. So
totally.
We have different ideas about how to...
Totally. And don't be manipulated.
Yeah. So Ken's not in this week.
Yeah, where is he?
I think Ken's in New York.
Oh.
Spreading the good word.
Okay.
Maybe catching some fish or trying to catch some fish. But we wish you all...
Is that a euphemism?
No, he likes fishing.
He doesn't do much catching, but he does
a lot of fishing. So, good luck to you out there, Ken. We're going to be happy to have you back next week.
Babe Winkleman.
Wow, that's a deep cut.
Yeah. Remember that show?
I had to watch it when I was in trouble as a kid.
Yeah, that's right.
My dad didn't want to get out of his chair to discipline us. So it was like, you're in trouble. Sit there. You got to watch fishing. I hated it. It worked. I tried to stay on the straight and narrow.
I think sometimes it would supersede like Saturday morning cartoons. There would be some, they'd get bumped for Babe Winkleman. So yeah, I always had an axe to grind against them because I was like, man, I'm missing out on Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles to watch Babe Winkleman.
Yeah, I would just think about them promoting like the newest lures. I was like, I don't know what this thing is.
We'll talk to Ken about that. He's the expert.
Yeah, we should have like a little brief fishing outdoorsman segment.
It's fishing corner.
Prime fishing season. So
I like that.
We'll let that wait till Ken comes back.
Okay.
So yeah, we're going to be back. We've got to take a quick break, and we'll be back with Nick Weaver from ABOC. So stay with us right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to The Worker's Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Worker's Mic, powered by MCL, right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher, here with Phil Davidson, and as we said before, we are excited to have a guest in the studio today, and that is Nick Weaver, the President and Chief Operating Officer of ABOC, formerly known as Amalgamated Bank of Chicago, but now we're ABOC only, right, Nick?
That's right. Yeah, we recently rebranded. And first of all, thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome
to the show. We're happy to have you.
Long time listener, first time caller.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
No, you guys, first and foremost, I wanted to say you guys do a great work. You're very passionate about labor. It comes through. I listen to the podcast every week.
Look at this guy, labor. You're already booked next week. We got you in.
He knows all the right things to say.
You're in the fold for sure. Yes.
Yeah. No, you guys do great work, Ken and yourself, all of you. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I've known about ABOC for many years, having worked in the union space, and you know, you you work with a lot of different unions. I mean, managing unions' money. Talk a little bit about what the bank, you know, who your clients are and what sort of your main business is.
Yeah, well, a little bit on our history. So we were founded, recently was our 102nd anniversary.
Really?
So we were founded.
Congrats.
By. Thank you. Yeah, it's exciting. So not many companies can, you know, the longevity and the stability of that is important to us. And that's part of what we talk about when we're out in the community. So we were founded by the Amalgamated Clothing Workers Union 102 years ago. They're now Workers United.
Really?
So we are founded by unions. And so presently, when we say we're for unions, it's been 102 years.
Yeah.
So we've been operating here. We're headquartered in Chicago, deeply rooted here. We do have union focus, and we always have, just because of where we come from. There's union ownership in our bank. Mm-hmm. We have key union leaders on our board of directors.
Including Gary Perenar, my boss.
And Jim Sweeney as well. So
yeah, we know a few definitely friends of the show.
Yes.
Right. Jim was
two of the brightest minds in the labor movement, I would say.
Jim was in the bank the other day. Gary was as well for meetings. And I told him I was coming on the show. And Jim was like, oh, be careful. They're characters. Yeah. But you know, we also have a subset of union employees ourselves, which is unique,
right,
especially for a bank.
Absolutely.
So we've always had union employees, and we still to this day maintain that. So
really,
we have a very unique makeup. And we feel like since we come from union and we have been union, you know, our focus on that is not superficial by any means.
Right.
So it is our bread and butter and something that we take very seriously.
And do your clients, do your clients run the gamut from building trades to service unions to...
dare say it's everyone. Yes.
Okay. Wow.
We do focus a lot. I mean, we do have a lot of the building trades, obviously, because they're wide ranging. But it's service sector, healthcare, government, municipality, you name it. And I think we have customers, you know, in those buckets. So, yeah, it's exciting. So we're 102 years old, and we decided we were going to rebrand.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, well, why now? You know, and that's not common. I mean, companies do that maybe once in a lifetime or once in a career for leaders. And so it's exciting. You know, what we want to do is we are Chicago-focused. We do have a union niche. Mm-hmm. And as a company, if you want to be successful, I mean, niches are a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so we want to play on that. We have good market share in Chicago. We always have. And it is our focus, whether it's union, commercial, real estate, corporate, institutional, trust services. We do have consumer customers and consumer business, although we have two branches, one downtown Chicago here and one in Warrenville, Illinois.
Right out there at the Electricians Hall, right?
It's right. It's in the IBEW Hall out there. So, you know, we are a full-service bank,
mm-hmm.
and we serve a variety of different customers. When we were founded, the mission was to serve the needs of businesses and working people. And that was 102 years ago, and I'm confident in saying we're still doing that now, upholding that mission. So commercial real estate's a big focus of ours as well. I mean, I can say we've helped build, develop, and rehab Chicago. Chicago downtown, Cook County, the suburbs.
Supporting projects that are using union labor as well.
Yeah.
So supporting unions in that way.
Yes.
Putting our members to work, yeah.
And that's important to us. We ask those questions a lot before we approve a loan deal. It's like, is there going to be union labor on this deal? So, you know, that's part of how we're helping look out for the community and our target markets as
well. Yeah, that's important. And even more to the point with, you know, walking the walk, not just talking the talk. ABOC does walk the walk. We've been out to meetings where you have, it's almost like a steering committee of different labor leaders, where you have people in different areas of the bank sit down with labor leaders and just stay in touch, network, have conversations about what they're getting, what they need, you know, how to strengthen the relationship and keep providing things to unions that are helpful to the unions, helpful to the members. So, I mean, working and kind of asking those questions and having an ear to unions as you're going about your daily business, I think is really proof of the commitment that you have.
Yeah, absolutely. It's not just about having the banking services of the union or the members. We view ourselves as an ally to labor. And so to your point, we have a labor council here in the Chicago area, and we have maybe 20, 25 labor leaders that get together. It is a peer networking type of thing. We usually try to educate them on something relative mm-hmm. that's top of mind. It could be fraud and how they can protect their businesses. You know, market conditions, what's going on with rates, what's going on with inflation, things like that. We'll have our chief investment officer talk to them and give an update. But as you know, recently we had you and Ken out to speak to the benefits of MCLR.
And there are, so. I mean, listening to the chief investment officer at that time, you know, talk about kind of the economic outlook and try to talk some sense into the markets, it was really interesting because it's hard to get that sort of unfiltered information. A lot of folks are really hesitant to give, you know, forecasts and outlooks and things like that. But I was very impressed with the staff, and they're very knowledgeable.
I mean, I rarely understand what he says most of the time, and I'm in meetings with him all day. But to get that unabashed opinion and that insight, and know that it's trusted advice, we view that as important. And then we bring in other people too. We'll bring in economists and whatnot, and other guest speakers. It's good to network and peer group. We do the same thing in St. Louis, which I'd like to point out. You know, part of our rebrand is that we want to grow. Banking is a largely competitive industry as much as any other industry, and it's a volatile industry as well. So while we are very stable, and we have been, you know, over the years and even through some of the most recent volatile times, whether recession, pandemic, you know, other things, you know, we want to grow core businesses, and we view our niche in unions as a potential way to do that. But we have that expertise, and while we do it very well and always have in Chicago, we'd like to spread that and leverage our Midwestern values in other key cities here in the Midwest, in the near Midwest. We might do the greater Midwest, but I say St. Louis, we've been down there for over 20 years. Right. We have a council down there as well with 20 key labor leaders and do the same thing that we do here. It's just
that's smart.
And, you know, we do one in Northwest Indiana similarly. But we'd like to see Indianapolis, Milwaukee, maybe the Twin Cities, Michigan. But if we can get out to the greater Midwest, you know, the Nebraskas, the Ohios type of thing, we'll do that eventually. But we don't want to get out ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, I think a lot of areas probably don't have this for unions. And you represent and service unions with their, let's say, their general treasury dollars, but also with investment vehicles for their retirement funds and pensions, things like that.
Right.
So you're managing the money for the unions, but also managing the money for members' retirements, which is sacred, and, you know, have done a great job over so many years. And union members come in as, you know, clients, as customers to the bank as well, right?
Yeah, they will. They always have, and they still do. Like I said, we have consumer offerings, and they're very competitive. We're a full-service bank, like I said. So we do have that where it tends to happen. We have journeymen that have been with us for a long time. We have apprentices that sign up that they might have just graduated high school, and they're unbanked. They live with mom and dad.
Yeah.
Now they have a job. Nice. making a you know, a good buck.
And it's absolutely. Like,
so to that point,
what do I do with all this money?
How can we provide? If we can provide member value, then we're just creating, we're exponentially creating more value for the union itself as well. So we have digital and online banking services, payments. You know, we also go out and try to do financial literacy education with the apprentices, with some of the unions that ask us and are interested in us doing that.
That's very so important.
To empower them with what does it mean to have a checking account, a savings account, to establish credit, to budget, to pay bills, you know, to plan for retirement, get a loan for a house or tools or a car. So we do that, and we try to do that. We're trying to do it more and more because it's important. But relative to the unions, we, again, full services. We have, you mentioned earlier, treasury management services to help them manage their cash, pay their employees, run their business. We lend. We've done a lot of projects. We always have, but even recently, to help build new apprentice training centers, general purpose halls. We're remodeling headquarter type locations for business operations. We do a lot of that in and around the Chicago land area as well. And then trust investment services is really a sweet spot for us. You know, growing, preserving general purpose funds, health and welfare, you know, as well as pension. So,
yeah, I mean, I think expanding across the Midwest, going back to what you were saying about that, I think is so important, because to your point about pushing financial literacy, that's something that you, as a bank that's focused on unions and union members, that may seem just, you know, normal business to you, but for most banks, it just isn't. Banks are often just, you know, you look at a rate, you try to get the best rate, but they're kind of a nameless, faceless thing. But that's where you're different, I think, in that you specialize with union members, and coming out and teaching financial literacy with the experience and sort of the deep knowledge you have of these benefit funds and the lives of these workers and what they need and what they go through. It's an enormous value, because we talk with our investment folks from Megan Financial all the time about the need for financial literacy with working people. Because if you're lucky enough to have a good union job where you have some savings going in for you, it's all being done for you, you've got to know what all those things are and what they're doing for you and what you're going to do.
Especially when you retire.
Right. What they're going to look like when you need them. So having that extra set of hands there to kind of help you understand some of this is so important. And, you know, as you were saying, places like Indianapolis and Nebraska, you know, do they have banks that are doing this for union members? I would venture to say they're probably not, because, you know, I don't know of any other banks other than you that do this. So
right. There aren't many. And I would say that out of the ones that there are, we're the leading union bank in the country.
Right.
You know, and definitely here in Chicago and the Midwest. So we take it seriously. The members are just as important to us as our union businesses, mm-hmm. the bank with us. So you know, we're stable. And I think if I were, and not selfishly speaking for the bank's purpose, if I were a laborer, if I was a union, I think it's in their best interest to bank with a bank that understands their business,
sure.
understands their balance sheet,
absolutely.
What their purpose is. Because we share the same thing, because we have the same DNA.
Yeah.
Right.
So, you know, we talk a lot about that when we go out, and that's why we want to kind of spread that experience. And that we're an ally for labor, and mm-hmm. we think that we can leverage that to help the greater Midwest.
So if there were listeners out there who are union members, maybe looking for banking services, you know, how can they find out more about the bank and how to, you know, maybe get some of their money moved over with you?
Yeah, well, we're very well known from the business side of things mm-hmm. In the area. So we have key contacts out there, whether it's investment services or mm-hmm. general purpose. You know, we're always at functions and whatnot. So, but from we have a website, so www.aboc.com lists all of our services and key contacts, leaders, and people can contact us through there for sure. And so that's good. So, you know, but that's a good thing about us. When you look at the options, there's a lot of banking options in the United States,
yeah.
and some of them aren't even located in the United States,
right.
and are still here in Chicago and whatnot. So, to be a local bank, we have local operations, customer service, relationship management, management that's making decisions quickly. So we're accelerating access to people for banking services or to get a critical question answered.
Right.
Keeping
a face on the bank.
Right. That's not common anymore.
Yeah.
And so it's really a relationship first approach, a partnership, an ally approach. And that's really the values of our bank.
And having a board made up of union leaders is critical. You know that they're going to be faithful stewards in making sure that our members and their investments are all taken care of. So, you're in the right hands.
Not only do they make sure we're doing the right thing, but it's good to get their insight and make sure we're heading in the right direction as well. And part of this rebrand and growth plans, they've had valuable insight into. So I'm confident that we're headed in the right direction and doing the right thing.
Is there anything that spurred the rebrand, particularly, of why you guys decided, hey, now's the time?
I think the growth plans is that was part of it. You know, 102nd anniversary.
Yeah.
We could have done it at our 100th anniversary, but I think the pandemic, you know, was kept people sidetracked and maybe wasn't the right time. You know, over the past few years, we have a lot of momentum, have created new energy with the bank, too. So I became president in March, so you could argue there was some new vision and energy from that. But prior to that, we hired. We have a lot of legacy employees with decades of experience, and some of them came from the unions.
Yeah, I know many of them.
You know, or have Taft-Hartley experience or whatever it might be. So that's good. But we've also hired some new and infused some new energy with new talent. So we've invested in talent. We're investing in technology, products, services, doubling down on our focus with unions. Our commercial real estate portfolio is as large as it's ever been in a good way. And a lot of it focused here in Chicago and in the greater, you know, counties. So that energy and momentum is kind of a platform for us to elevate, you know, and stair step off of for this rebrand as well. And it's like taking your old sports car, muscle car, and repainting it and putting some new rims on it, right?
Yeah,
right.
Then you feel more confident and proud to drive it around town.
Just so enhancing it.
I view the rebrand kind of like that. So.
Well, it's great.
Good for you.
Yeah, I mean, you're doing a tremendous amount of great work, and you know, our members, I think, appreciate that, even what's going on behind the scenes that maybe they didn't know about. But listeners, members, if you're out there and you're looking for a bank, check out ABOC. It's, again, ABOC.com. And we've been talking to Nick Weaver, the president and chief operating officer. So thank you, and hope we'll be able to get you back in the studio again sometime soon.
Definitely. I enjoyed it. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right. We'll be right back with more Workers' Mic after this.
You're listening to The Workers' Mic, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megant Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to The Workers' Mic right here on 720 WGN. I'm Ed Maher with Phil Davidson, and if you've been listening to the show, we just wrapped up with Nick Weaver. Heck of a guy.
Yeah.
It's nice to see a bank that's really focused on communities and trying to work with individuals. And it was nice to have him in. We appreciate it. Thanks again for coming in, Nick.
That was great.
So at the top of the show, we talked about the new face that people all across America have largely been introduced to in the last week. And that's J.D. Vance, Donald Trump's pick for vice president nominee.
Yes. So finally, he's been unveiled.
He's been unveiled. I know this is the first time for a lot of folks in America. This guy could be the vice president, potentially.
Yeah.
And so I think it warrants talking a little bit more about where he stands on issues. You know, the first time that I ever became aware of J.D. Vance was when his book came out, Hillbilly Elegy.
Did you read it?
No, but I talked to a couple people who did, so I feel like I almost got the Reader's Digest.
Yeah.
And it was, I mean, from what I understand, it's a story of kind of the downfall of Appalachia and the struggles of...
the working class.
Yeah, working class, the lower middle class, whether it's with, you know, industries being decimated like coal or, you know, things like the opioid epidemic that absolutely destroyed Appalachia. So I think that's how I became aware of him, and he kind of rode that wave of fame into the Senate, and then.
Well, there was a couple of stops along the way.
Let's hear about him.
Well, you know, he went to Yale Law.
Yes.
And then he became, you know, he worked at a white shoe law firm, very successful attorney.
Yep.
And then he went into venture capitalism, worked with Peter Thiel and all the Silicon Valley bigwigs. And so was out there. I lived in San Francisco.
So it's a real rags to riches to San
Francisco. Overnight.
And I will say that part of his story with Hillbilly Elegy, it became popular in sort of the union circle because there was a lot of talk about like the only way out of this lifestyle was like being from a family with like a good paying union job or like a job with benefits. So that path from rags to riches was kind of paved with union money, union benefits.
Right.
You know, it's how you lift yourself up out of poverty and into Yale Law School and private equity, venture capital, you know, lots and lots and lots of dollars.
Silicon Valley.
Right.
And that's the only thing I feel just, and this happens all the time with Senate candidates, but then they're like, oh no, we got to make him the Senate candidate from Ohio. So he left San Francisco, moved back, and I know the family roots, like, he was living in Ohio, I believe, but the family's from Appalachia.
Right.
And, you know, I'm not going to call him a carpetbagger because that is where he's from originally, but, just the idea of like, oh, this guy's a star. Let's bring him back to our state and we'll run him there.
Well, I know a handful of folks from West Virginia and Ohio that do call him a carpetbagger. It seems like he's lost a little bit of popularity as he's changed personalities from
There's been several
blue collar guy to venture capital guy to, you know, middle of the road guy now to hard right. There's been various iterations.
Yeah, he's sort of a zealot.
And I think it can be a little troubling, and that's with a lot of politicians. But you know, this new version of J.D. Vance, I mean, I kind of want to talk a little bit about one of my...
Yeah, he spoke on Wednesday night.
Yeah, and I mean, my personal experience with J.D. Vance was that he, as he's sought from the Senate his next stepping stone, which I don't know if he thought it was going to be president or thought it was going to be vice president or what, he had a think tank, you know, a foundation, a thought foundation put together that supports him, and it's called American Compass. So as a union person, I had seen some things.
Is it kind of like an IE? Are they?
No, it's. I mean, think the same type of thing as like the Heritage Foundation.
Got it. Okay.
In more ways than one, they're similar.
Yes.
But this American Compass sort of exists to promote J.D. Vance and some of his ideas, but to do it in a way that's not campaign, not political. It's a think tank. It's these economists that are coming up with ideas.
So it's separate from his political expenditure committees.
Yeah, but it's like an arm to support him. So I had dealt with some folks there, and the idea was that they're talking points where like unions have been the best vehicle to lift people out of poverty. But unions are not popular anymore and nobody likes them. And we've got to find a different way.
Well, that's wrong, but okay.
That's for sure. I mean, I'll say CBS even reported today that union support's over 70%, the highest it's been in 60 years.
Yeah.
So that's not true and hasn't been true for years. But the idea was that we've got to get rid of unions and start something called worker organizations. And what do these look like? For a corporation, we get rid of unions and workers can elect one representative and maybe they sit on the board and in a non-voting role. And then workers have a say and they have a direct connection to the board. But then they wouldn't have any sort of actual power, you know, no power to negotiate, no power to bargain. It would be like basically inviting, voting for one person to go to a pizza party. It's the old pizza party. So
they're even more powerless than whatever those worker associations in India we were talking about a few weeks ago.
Yeah, they don't even have air conditioning. But the whole idea here, and the thing that kind of struck
there's
me
there's no leverage.
This, well, that and the fact that he started the, that this group starts the whole thing with, unions have done a great job, but we want to get away from them. Like they're anti-union in a way that sounds pro-union.
Yeah.
And to folks that aren't in a union out there, like why should this matter to you? This is just the idea that, you know, the last year or two, you've seen unions successful in strikes, in negotiations, in organizing. People are making more money. People are getting benefits they didn't have. People are able to buy homes, to retire, to go to the doctor. That's a good thing. Mm-hmm. Whether you're in a union, whether you're not in a union, I think we all have to agree that more money in workers' pockets is a good thing. And so why would anybody want to try to stop that? Because, you know, where's the money coming from? It's coming from companies, coming from corporations into workers' pockets. Who wants to stop that flow? People who are not out for workers. So if you're a worker and you're seeing this, you know, be wary of this. And I, you know, this is a new face and I understand we try not to get super political, but this is sort of a long time coming with J.D. Vance. And I'll say this, and I think this is very important. This group, American Compass, if you look at some of their stuff, everything they talk about is promoting J.D. Vance. Mm-hmm. So I'm not talking out of school or making any big leaps here. But I read their annual report and from last year. And in the introduction on the labor portion of it, they say, we've been pushing these ideas for a while, and now the Heritage Foundation is involved. They've gotten on board, and they asked us to help write the labor section of Project 2025.
Oh, my Lord.
So we talked about Project 2025 last week.
Ed's got the red string board up over right now. He's making all the connections for us.
It's not
He's sweating.
The good thing about it is they're telling us. they're writing in their annual report these connections. So it's not as though I'm you know, just jumping to conclusions here.
Yeah.
But Project 2025 is this thing that's been talked about so much lately. And, you know, folks wonder if there's a connection with former President Trump or not. But the policy proposal.
He says no, but his staff is. Fingerprints are all over it.
That's correct.
Yeah.
But Project 2025, to remind everybody, the things that they want to do are within labor, it's get rid of overtime pay and replace it with, you know, extra vacation time, or just get rid of safety regulations, get rid of all the regulations.
Get rid of government employee unions altogether. Decimate them.
That's not to say, like, they're also pushing to get rid of abortion. Contraception of you know, so many different things, regulations across the spectrum. And I think everybody who looks into what Project 2025 is about would agree that this is not in the interest of ordinary people. There's not a lot here that's going to help any one of us. So the fact that the Heritage Foundation asked this American Compass to help author this, I think should be a red flag for workers, whether you're in a union or whether you're not, because they're just talking about taking away some of the most basic rights we have.
Big time. And not to be a cynic here, but...
Be a cynic. It's okay.
You have to wonder, just given what's happening with the polling right now, what's happening with this election, and how the Republican Party, which is typically, traditionally, historically, been more the party that supports big business, less government regulation, tax cuts for the wealthy. I mean, that's been their platform for decades, right? But now all of a sudden there's just been this switch to, no, we're pro-worker now with J.D. Vance. I mean, if you listen to his speech, like, I could see someone saying, like, this guy's looking out for me. And again, we're not to really say that he's not, but you got to question some things.
Yeah.
And you just have to wonder, like, now that the script has been flipped, where now the working class seems to be gravitating more towards the Republican Party. If they're seeing this, if they're reading the tea leaves, if they've got their finger up to the wind and like, okay, maybe we should be talking more about this now, because this whole, you know, watching some of the speeches, Sean O'Brien from the Teamsters, I mean, if you had a labor leader speaking about burning down corporate America, which in a way he was sort of saying, you know, they would have been shot on the floor at the Republican National Convention, you know? And now it's like, oh, no, this is what we want. And you could see what during his speech, some people were getting more uncomfortable about it.
He didn't get a whole lot of applause.
Right.
He stood out there and he said his thing. I would have liked to have seen some more out of him. But I mean, the fact that he was there, you know, as they say, I guess if you're not at the table, you're on the table. So
true. Yeah, that's I mean, I understand both sides there. I mean, that was definitely a controversial move for him to speak there. But it's sort of, there were some similarities what he was saying and what Vance was saying, and it seems like no, we got to be worker. But then when you get into power, are you going to have that same consistency? Are you going to stay faithful to that? That's really what it comes down to. And as you're pointing out, just be a little skeptical of it. You know, a healthy skepticism never hurt.
Yeah, I mean, so much of the success in Donald Trump's first presidential campaign has been sort of given to the fact that middle class folks went to him because they didn't have a voice.
Yes.
And I can say that, I mean, go back to, say, the Obama administration, where, you know, they had the Employee Free Choice Act, and it was like, hey, we've got a Democratic House, Democratic Senate, Democratic White House. You've been talking about helping workers and doing this, do this. And it's like, ah, we got to do health care. And I think a lot of folks are like, well, wait a second. If you're the party that's going to help us, you can help us, but, like, you're not.
Yes.
So people, there was a vacuum.
Yeah.
I you know, I don't think I'm really making any headlines saying that workers felt like there was not a party that was really supporting them. And so it's taken a long time, but the other side is now, the Republican side has figured this out, and you can say, hey, we're for workers. We're trying to push, you know, for working families, and people want to hear that. People have been desperate to hear that. But whatever side you're listening to, whether it's right or left, just be sure that you know what you're listening to and you know what to listen out for, because somebody can say, I'm pro-worker and I want workers to have freedom, so I want to get rid of unions and I want to get rid of all these protections because workers shouldn't have all these layers of regulation. It's all bad. You should you know, shouldn't get tied up in regulation. But sometimes that regulation is protecting your wages, protecting your safety.
Yeah.
So have your nose tuned and be prepared to smell some BS. And I'm talking both sides as we head into, you know, a fall that's going to be just not fun, man.
No.
I'm just really not looking forward to America cracking itself in half again.
I know.
So, but it's one depressing. Other thing that that you had brought up when we were talking off the air is that Trump has been a big proponent of tariffs, you know, which is fees for imported items.
And Vance as well. Vance was
exactly
espousing the same platform and the same ideas.
So you got two guys who are all about tariffs.
Yeah.
And I mean, what do you think that means to working Americans?
There was a good article about this recently, and this is, I think this is a very good philosophical debate about, you know, tariffs, which would obviously, the ultimate goal would be to boost domestic manufacturing. You know, if you have less imported goods coming in, you're making more stuff here, and it would ostensibly increase jobs in this country. But the flip side of that is, you know, when companies, domestic companies here, have to pay more tariffs, they pass down those costs to consumers. So now it's more money for, more costs for consumers in their daily goods and purchases. So I tend to fall on the side of, I would rather see workers get paid more and increase jobs than have cheap goods. Because, and that's really what almost what it comes down to. And in our country, as we talk about, we've been spoiled with cheap goods forever. The classic example being flat screen televisions.
For sure.
Now cost couple hundred dollars, whereas 10 years ago you would spend $2,500 for a 50-inch TV, and now literally you can get it for $199 at Walmart.
Yeah, I mean, because they're being produced, and I mean, even the supply chain, there are no regulations. There's these people are you know, that mine the minerals for the chips, and, you know, create the plastic for the housings and assemble the TVs. They're not being paid well, and so a TV can cost $250.
Right.
If American, you know, an American company built a TV, they would have to comply with American laws, worker protections, which is not a bad thing.
Not at all.
It's a good thing to have protections. We're an advanced society and we shouldn't want to walk backward. But, you know, it sort of evens the playing field, I think.
Yeah.
And I think that's a question that consumers have to ask, and it's a difficult one.
Absolutely it is. I mean, when things, people talk
everything
about...
Everything costs more,
yeah.
You know, for a million reasons, not the least of which is... companies see an opportunity to charge more for the same thing.
Totally.
A lot of them have gotten their hands caught in the cookie jar in the last few months where, you know, you see Target saying, like, we're going to lower our prices on a lot of things. Walmart, we're going to lower our prices on a lot of things. And it's like, well, how can you do that without, you know, any concern at all? Oh, that was just pure fat that
yes.
you had put on top of there.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Busted. But yeah, the tariff conversation is certainly
Yeah, because I think he
one.
Was talking about 10% tariffs on any foreign import.
Yeah.
From any country, then like 60% on China,
wow.
which is obviously, you know, the main player there. And who knows, this could result in another trade war. But
I mean, I would think so.
Yeah, it certainly has all the makings of it. If, you know, this would assuming that if Trump is successful in the election. But that is something that people should really consider when they talk about, we need more jobs in this country, you know. Well, people, and you need living wages, well, that's going to require you to probably pay a little bit more for
yeah.
what you go out and what you purchase. And you can't have it both ways. You can't have people getting paid fair and decent wages, being able to support themselves, their families, receive good benefits, and also have buy TVs that cost $5. You know,
right.
It's just that those two are never going to reconcile. So just, you know, kind of remember that when you're saying, oh, I'm pro-American jobs, that, okay, well, that's going to cost a little more because
yeah.
that's just how it works. You got to pay people. We'll see what happens. I don't know. I just love that really is, there's when it comes down to economists, in you'll hear both sides saying, no, it's mm-hmm. actually better for the country. It's better for the economy if we do have cheaper goods, because then those companies can take those dollars that they and put it more into research and design and then come up with new products, and that'll create more jobs.
Yeah, innovation.
Innovation, correct. So I find it fascinating, like the both sides of it, but whatever. We can talk about that.
I've got an idea. So
yeah.
workers out there listening,
yeah.
In these conversations, as we're headed into an election cycle, let's talk about the things that you want to know more about, or maybe let's have some of you on the air to talk about things that you're interested in.
Love that.
What is driving your voting decision? Whatever it is, and let's talk about it. So if you want to let us know sort of what your issues are, what your top issues are, what your feelings are about the upcoming election, what's pushing you to vote one way or the other, send us an email. We'd love to hear from you, and you can send that to workersmike@wgnradio.com. Send it in. We'll give you a shout out on the air. Maybe we'll get you on the phone. Maybe we'll even have you in. And,
yeah, that'd be great. That'd be fascinating. But, I'd love to hear what's on everyone's mind.
Yeah, let's start a real conversation that we can carry into the fall here, you know, that's meaningful. So we've got to take a quick break, but we will be back with more Workers' Mike right here on 720 WGN.
You're listening to the Workers' Mike, powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Workers' Mike here on WGN. We're running a little low on time. It's a jam-packed show this week. But before we go, one of the things that we had reported on probably 2 months ago now was Dollar General.
Yeah.
They were
dangerous
facing,
working conditions.
Yeah, OSHA was coming after Dollar General hard because they had so many cases of water in the back of their stores.
That's what it was, yeah.
That they were systematically blocking.
And not cases of water to sell, like...
Yeah, they were blocking fire exits with
Oh, that's like, what it was. Okay.
Yeah, it was the store basically across many, many, many locations. They would pile up all this stuff in front of the exits so that people couldn't sneak out the back door and take a break or something, but it was a safety violation. So
right.
OSHA came after them. And they just, and I mean, not to mention the fact that they you know, they had like birds nesting in the buildings and
yeah.
the company wouldn't fix roofs. It's you know, they keep prices low by not investing in their stores.
Yeah. See, that's what I thought you meant. I thought you meant like cases of water damage being like instances. But
oh, yeah.
yeah.
There are a million things. I mean, this company has got an enormous black eye. But
yeah.
They settled with OSHA for $12 million, which I think is kind of a drop in the bucket.
Yeah.
Just not even a gentle slap on the wrist to create some new safety protocols.
Because they got
to
have thousands of stores.
Yeah.
In that company. They're everywhere.
I think they have more locations than any other store in America.
I think you told me that, yeah.
But they've got to create new safety protocols, such as don't systematically block your fire exits.
It's a sound policy.
It seems like something that they shouldn't have to be told to do, but hey, whatever. Who am I? What do I know?
It seems like there could be a class action there, no?
I would think. I mean, yeah. Something terrible would probably have to happen.
Yeah.
I don't know, which hopefully it never does now that we've got a little bit of a resolution here.
Yeah. Now, if the Project 2025 has its way, there probably wouldn't be any sort of recourse there.
Well, you wouldn't have a fire exit to block.
Yeah, there's no fire exit to block, and there would be no OSHA to investigate.
More doors cost more money.
Right.
So that sounds like government regulation to me, Phil. Oregon, there's a county in Oregon, Wallowa County, that actually came out with a new requirement for attracting businesses, where they have banned businesses that have requirements for their architectural design, color schemes, basically worded this ban in a way that it will keep out chain stores like Dollar Tree, Family Dollar, and Dollar General, because in this part of Oregon, they have seen these stores come in, local stores close, the workers have to go work at Dollar General, Dollar Tree, they make less money. Like, it's just a race to the bottom. And so they've gotten a little bit creative and a little bit activist on this and come up with the first in the country way of just saying, Dollar Tree, Dollar General, we don't want you here. You're not good for the people. You're not good for the local businesses. And, I get that logic.
I like it, too.
So we'll
no stores with the word dollar in the name.
Probably, right.
Smart.
So we'll have to see how that plays out. We'll keep everybody in touch on that. But speaking of dollars, Elon Musk, not necessarily a friend of workers.
Not exactly a dollar store shopper.
Not at all.
Yeah.
He has committed to funding the campaign of Donald Trump at an eye-popping level of
$45 million a month.
$45 million a month to make sure. I mean,
a pro-Trump super PAC.
15 years ago, that would have been illegal.
Yeah.
There were limits on how much an individual could give a politician. And the fact that you could see him putting in $200 million or more in the next couple of months.
And there's already talk about him getting advisory roles does win. And he came through with the full throttle endorsement after the assassination attempt. So, now he's in and he's giving him $45 million. And it's just like,
you want to talk about a swamp? We're talking about, drain the swamp.
Right.
You're not going to drain it with one guy pumping in $45 million a month.
Yeah. Do we want the richest man on planet Earth to be setting policy for the majority of the country?
I don't think so.
Yeah,
I don't think so. He's a little wacky.
Yeah.
But we'll have more on that next week. Again, if you want to talk to us about the election and what's your most important issue as a worker, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
WorkersMike at WGNRadio.com.
Any suitors for Ashley yet?
Yeah. I think there's so many we've got to have.
I forgot the server's crashed.
More on that later, we've got to go. We are out of time, so we'll be back next week with more Workers' Mike right here on 720 WGN.
The preceding episode of The Workers' Mike was powered by the Midwest Coalition of Labor and sponsored by Megan Financial, Premise Health, and Voya Financial. For additional information and podcasts of The Workers' Mike, visit WGNRadio.com.